It's that time of year again. My schedule is packed with bracket-busting, three-point shooting, nonstop basketball action. I don't want to miss a second of it, and I find myself staying up late to catch all the action. I can't be dragging the next morning. That's why I go for a 5-hour energy shot. They're perfect for my days packed with back-to-back games or when my favorite team is playing late. With over 15 flavors to choose from, like watermelon, tropical burst, blue raspberry, peach mango, and more, there's a flavor for everyone. On their website, you have the option to build your own 12-pack or 24-pack and have it delivered right to your door. And if you're out and about, you can always pick up a 5-hour energy shot at your local grocery or convenience store. They're everywhere. 5-hour energy keeps me going during the broadcast and the next morning when I need to get myself up and to work. Visit 5hourenergy.com for great deals and to stock up before the next tip-off.
True North stores have Primo Eats and Pepsi brand products that are heavy on taste and light on your wallet. Right now, buy any Primo sandwich and add a 20-ounce Pepsi brand beverage for just $1. Handmade every day, Primo uses quality meats and cheeses. Complete the meal with a Pepsi. Grab any Primo sandwich and pair it with a 20-ounce Pepsi brand beverage for just $1. Get more with the True Rewards mobile app. Available in your app store. True North convenience stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average, and auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast. Okay,
we'll get to the good and the bad of the Astros this weekend in just a second. Big congrats to the Cougs making it to the Final Four. We'll talk about you guys as well. As we roll on with the show here on a Monday, Rockets get a big win last night. A good weekend in Houston sports, no doubt about that. Around baseball, one of the big topics is this torpedo bat on Monday. Something I didn't know existed on Friday is now a big topic from the weekend because the Yankees hit 15 home runs in three games, including 9 on Saturday, which those 9 included 3 in the first 3 pitches that their former teammate Nestor Cortez of the Brewers through to the Yankees. He ended up giving up a 4th home run. They came out to try to calm him down after the first 3 pitches landed in the seats. He calmed down long enough to get one out and then give up another home run after that. It was ugly.
So go ahead with the torpedo.
As it turns out,
Cortez was tipping his pitches.
Yeah. As it turns out, the Yankees, some of them, not all of them, but some of them are using a bat that has been designated the torpedo bat because it's got a different look to it. There's an MIT physicist that kind of invented this thing a couple of years ago when he was working for the Yankees, where they move some of the wood closer to what they deem the sweet spot of the bat.
Yeah, and where that player makes the most contact.
Yeah.
And yeah, so you get more velocity out of it. So
yeah.
It's been around since 2022,
right?
And there's several players on several teams using it already this season.
Yeah.
So it's nothing nefarious. It's completely within the rule book. And yet, I'm almost furious that the Astros aren't using it, if it does indeed end up being a huge advantage.
I'm furious the Astros aren't using it. Here's where something I didn't know existed on Friday, had no strong feeling one way or the other, really until about 10 minutes ago, as far as whether I like it, don't like it, or whatever. So the studio we're in right here has ABC on this morning, KTRK, and there's a tease for Good Morning America, which started at the top of the hour. The tease to Good Morning America today, Seth, is about the torpedo bat and the 9 home runs that the Yankees hit on Saturday.
Oh, it's crossed over.
If any other team had hit the 9 home runs with a torpedo bat on Saturday, would that be getting the tease for Good Morning America at the top of the hour?
Yes, and that team is the Houston Astros. It would be framed as the Astros up to their old tricks or something, and which I desperately wanted to be the case with the torpedo bat and the Yankees, but it turns out it's 100% within the rule book. You find yourself wondering, how did it take this long for somebody to realize, treat this thing a little differently on the lathe, and we'll have more exit velocity. I don't know why it took so long.
It is funny when you think about it. Like, players have been shooting themselves up. They've been moving fences in at ball. How do we get more home runs?
And pitch clock. We need the pitch clock.
Yeah. Nothing. And no, it just turns out you move a little bit of wood around in the bat, and boom, there you go. Maybe.
I think that it's like you got to give it some time and see how it all plays out. I'm guessing there might be some weaknesses to it, too. Now, the Astros better damn be on their calculators right now figuring out what the potential weaknesses are with a torpedo bat.
There's still some nerds in the building, right? We didn't clean out all the nerds.
They didn't clean out. No, okay. Dana Brown has talked about how valuable the analytics has been to him. He's much more of an old school guy than the previous GMs.
Yeah.
But he's gushed about how with guys like, it wasn't Ronel Blanca. Who was it that he was talking about last week? Just where he's learned where they've helped him with his blind spots.
Who was
bit.
It? It was somebody where, the story he was telling was about Philip Maton.
It was Phil Maton.
And he's like, man, how does this guy get anybody out? And then he talks to the analytics guys. And they're like, spin rate that. That'd be funny today if Dana Brown walks into their Monday staff meeting. I have no idea if they have a Monday staff meeting, but let's pretend they do. And he brings in just this gigantic table saw, and he's like, "Here you go, nerds. Figure it out. Get us a bat, all right?"
It would be a lathe, Sean. The lathe is the thing that spins the piece of wood around, and then you carve it.
You know my weak spots. You know how many tools I operate.
If they show up with a bat crafted by a table saw, I'm going to be livid. Yeah, that's
would not be a good bat.
Janky square thing.
Would not be a good bat. Design has been around since the mid-80s. Although they were aluminum, they were known as bottle bats. Good bats. And they do look like bottles. Someone said on the text page they look like Captain Caveman's club.
It's more of a Coke bottle or a juggling pin.
Yeah.
I don't think it really looks like a torpedo.
Yeah.
But it's like a longer, skinnier, svelter version of your chubby old baseball bat.
Yeah. I think some of it too with the Yankees may have to do with the fact that their ballpark is a bandbox.
Listen, Joe. Well, actually, we're talking about professional baseball in the wooden version of this bat. Okay, it's been around since 2022. They messed around with it in the minors. A few major leaguers have started using it, but a lot of them have tried it and not really liked it. It is one of those instances where the only market for wooden baseball bats anymore is in Major League Baseball. Mm-hmm. So I guess it stands to reason the bat-producing companies don't have the same pressure on them for innovation in wooden bats.
That's true. Yeah, play the hits, man.
They should just go to composite bats in the major leagues. Everybody alive today, for the most part, has spent the past several decades very much liking the clink of a bat off of a youth league player, a little league player, or what have you.
Aaron Judge with an aluminum bat.
Yeah.
They would land in the Hudson River, man.
Well, no, they deaden them. It's easier to, then you just standardize them all, and then there you go. I'm tired of this death grip Louisville Slugger has on the wooden bat market.
You're right. That is true. They've got a stranglehold on it. Payne and Pendergast with you. All right, to me, biggest developments positive for the Astros this weekend. Number one, Spencer Arrighetti and the start that he had on Saturday against the Mets. You know, it's early in the season, so if you're 2-1, 1-2, you know, whatever. But they're going to need more than just the top two guys doing their thing this year. If you're going to win the division, forget about win the World Series, the division is a dogfight this year. And I will point out that Jacob DeGrom had a really good start for the Rangers this weekend. That's a big reason why the Rangers are being picked above the Astros by a lot of people, is they're getting DeGrom back this year. So he had a good start this weekend. Spencer Arrighetti's start is the biggest development of the weekend for me, for the Astros.
Yeah.
His six innings that he, really efficient six innings that he threw.
The starting pitching was as confidence inspiring as the relief pitching was a little bit terrifying, especially in game one. But even in game two, or game three on Saturday, Abreu looked at first like it might be a little bit dicey. I think that Arrighetti made changes during the season last year and matured in a lot of ways in season that you just didn't know how much of it you could count on once people have an entire offseason to look at him. And he's transformed himself into very much a professional starting pitcher. I think that Hunter Brown, I wasn't nervous about either of those guys. But you don't see people writing about Arrigetti around the league or in their offseason appraisals of how the Astros can be as much as they do Hunter Brown, obviously.
Yeah, and he wasn't as good as Hunter Brown in the second half of last season. Few were. But he was definitely a much better version of himself than the one that came up from Sugarland early in the year. Here was Spencer Arrigetti following Saturday's game. He was on with John Smoltz from Fox, did a little interview with him after the game, and said, "What's different about you now than when you came up a year ago?"
I attribute it to a couple of things, maybe a change in mentality, a shift in my focus, maybe taking it away from the stuff model and kind of just trying to go out there and really compete my nuts off every time I take the ball. I feel like that's really the biggest thing. And then, like you said, just kind of changing the attack plan a little bit, switching the mix up, and just not ever being too predictable.
Yeah, he's been great, man.
No, and it's cool to watch. Just like Arrigetti, if you take the sum total of last season, he was up in the double-digit ERAs the entire month of April, and just steadily over the course of the season whittled it down to a 4.53. But he got rid of some of those disastrous. If he just gets rid of some of those disastrous beginnings,
yeah,
where every now and then he'd be humming along. And then all of a sudden, he goes two-thirds of an innings versus the Reds or whoever it was there late in the year. Like, if he doesn't have those meltdowns, it was a really impressive rookie.
He's got a wild game log. So does Hunter Brown from last year. Remember Hunter Brown's thing last year, Seth, was he started pitching really well, like, in the middle of May. Really in June is when he started to turn it on. And he had so many consecutive starts that were excellent. But his ERA never got under 4 for the season until, like, September.
Yeah.
Like, he was great. That's how bad he was in the beginning of the year, is it took him all summer long of pitching at an elite level just to get his ERA back into the high 3s.
Well, in the last year, as stressful as it was, I mean, you had guys like Hunter Brown and Spencer Arrigetti that did not look one bit like they were ready for action. In that first part of the Astros start where it was just so bad, it was a completely different feel than what you have right now. I mean, if the Astros offense performed in those first three games the way they did last year, or the way they performed in their first three games this year, if they did that last year, yeah, really good chance, especially against a team like the Mets, that you're going to be 0-3.
Mm-hmm.
So it feels like a more well-rounded baseball team right now.
Peña had a big bomb on Saturday. It was a solo home run, but it was the first extra base hit of the year. All right, how concerned are we that it took the Astros 2.5 games to get their first extra base hit?
I'm not. They went into Game 3 as the only major league team that hadn't hit an extra base run or extra base hit. I tried to bring it up in me somehow to overreact or be freaked out after two games, but you just can't do it. I saw people on Twitter demanding people's jobs and blaming spring training for it and what have you. The biggest positive to take away from it in those first few games that they showed really good judgment at the plate as a group. Even Dubon was taking a lot of pitches. So if Dubon is your canary in the coal mine about, like, is this team going to swing wildly like they did last year, it seems like they've really listened to and worked on the message from spring training, which is we got to get back to having much better judgment at the plate.
That's funny.
And they walked a bunch.
That's I keep thinking of parallels between the Astros and the Texans. And it's almost like the plate discipline was to the Astros coming into this offseason what the culture in the offensive line room appears to be to the Houston Texans. Where, I mean, now with the Texans, they're tearing that entire room down, it feels like, for the most part. I mean, 3/5 of the starting line is gone, and they're bringing in a bunch of guys. But it feels like they're trying to bring in a bunch of guys that change the overall tenor of that room. I think similarly, like, that was a big selling point on having Paredes as part of that Tucker deal, giving Christian Walker the contract they gave to a guy who's 34 years old. You know, they've done these three-year $60 million deals with aging first basemen before to far less success than they had expected.
Yeah.
But if Paredes and the patience he has and Walker and the patience he has, these are both guys that were in the top 10 in number of pitches they saw per at-bat last year. If that has some sort of bleed over effect to the other guys, where it's just their lineup goes back to being more of what it was in its heyday, where they tortured pitchers with how patient they were at the plate, you know.
Well, and if you look at Peña, And with his home run, we led into this little chunk with his home run.
Yeah.
His hard hit percentage right now is 50%. He's hitting the ball hard. His average last year was 38%. Obviously, that's early. It's going to come down a little bit. But his strikeout percentage by year, starting in 2022, 24.2%. Then in 23, he got it down to 20.3%. Last year, down to 17.1%. And this year, he's at 0% strikeout.
0%.
So that's a pretty good curve right
on
there,
pace
Sean.
For, yeah. But the thing about that with Pena is he's a guy that if he makes contact, there's a better chance of him making something happen with poor contact than there is with other guys. You know, if Pena puts the ball on the ground in the infield, if it's hit slow enough, he's going to beat it out to first base. You know, so
he's the opposite of Carlos Correa.
Yeah,
like running to first base.
Yeah, like him. Right. Carlos makes business decisions running down there. Pena runs like his hair is on fire. If that guy's making a lot more contact, then you know, it could be the difference between winning a couple games this year, beating out a double play, whatever it is, or an infield hit here and there.
I think he's one of the guys that it's fun to see the stuff he was actually working on in the offseason and in spring training has showed up so far in the season, defensively and offensively.
Yep.
So you always take all the spring training reports with a grain of salt. But with him, I think it's very real. You can see exactly how, it's okay to be optimistic about Jeremy Pena's season this year.
Yeah. Jake's hitting a little bit. What's the minimum Jake needs to hit where you can feel good that he's got to be out there to protect the entirety of the outfield from their amateur corner outfielders?
Well, he came up big with some nice plays defensively, but we know he can do that.
Yeah.
He always makes great plays out there.
Yeah.
He's in an interesting spot right now for
Seth.
He's hitting .286.
Yeah, right. Old school. Yeah, the old school number looks good. Yeah,
that's great. His OPS is .571.
That's not good.
Not so hot.
It's like
his
Zach
OPS plus is like .62 or something.
Zach Greinke's career OPS is like .571. Oh man, but you need him out there with the corner outfielders that you're playing out there. Jake's got to play.
I feel pretty optimistic, honestly, about Altuve in left field, even with a couple of hairy moments. One where he almost murdered Jake Myers in the first game. But then also the Juan Soto carom off of the left field wall.
Yeah.
Altuve didn't time his jump right. It would have been an awesome, awesome catch if he had. But that's the kind of stuff where he just needs reps.
Yeah.
I think if he had timed the jump right, he could have made the catch. But maybe, you know, he's got to start learning when to play the carom, when to go after it and everything. And it's just going to take reps. But it hasn't been a clown show out there.
No.
I know that Yordan wouldn't have made that catch. And Yordan probably wouldn't have even gone for it. Yordan would have caught the carom. So far, I don't feel awful about him in left field.
The problem is it's one of those plays that if it were happening while you and I were in the middle of doing a show, we would have gotten texts like, see, that's why you can't have a 5'6" guy playing left field. Because if I remember correctly, it caromed right above his glove against
right.
the wall.
Right, well, he jumped a little early, and he was kind of, just like it was in spring training, he was descending
on his way down,
as the ball was hitting the wall.
Yeah.
So he had enough height to catch it. It was just the timing of the jump.
Yep.
So I don't think Yordan would have gone for the catch in that situation.
All right, Payne and Pendergast.
I would have been mad if he did.
I would have, especially if he ran into the wall and hurt himself.
Yeah.
Payne and Pendergast with you on a Monday. The league meetings are this week for the NFL. There are some things that we should be watching for coming out of these league meetings. One big discussion point today, and then some rule change votes. We'll run through the agenda coming up next.
Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
All right, good to be with you on a Monday. Hope you had a great weekend. Payne and Pendergast with you. League meetings are this week in West Palm Beach. Crap, we just missed them by a month, Seth. We were in West Palm Beach a month ago. We just missed them.
They're dodging us, Sean.
Could have hung out in the lobby doing... There are a few people that are going to be covering this stuff locally here that are going to be down there. I do know that because there's some big doings going on.
I saw the team picture that they take with the head coaches every year, which is always entertaining. There didn't seem to be anybody overly goofy this year. Usually you get somebody that just looks way out of place. The only one, the power move was Nick Sirianni, at least in the front row, being the only guy wearing shorts. So I think Sirianni just shows up and is like, yep, whatever. I'm just going to wear whatever I wear, you clowns.
How'd his legs look? I saw the picture, but I didn't get a good look at that. Did he look
skinny,
athletic? Okay. Yeah, there he is. I'm looking at it right there. Sitting next to Andy Reid. Andy Reid looks thin by Andy Reid standards.
Good.
Yeah, he looks.
DeMeco looks jacked.
Yeah, my big takeaway from this picture again this year is that if you threw these 32 men in a room, and it looks like all 32 made the trip, I'm counting.
No, there's one missing.
There's one missing. Okay. So if you took these 31 men in this picture and threw them into Thunderdome together, I'm feeling pretty good about our head coach being one of the last two or three guys standing in there. Yeah. I think D'Amico will be able to handle his business against most of these guys. Dan Campbell's the one that you look at, you go, okay, if anybody's going to take down D'Amico, it's probably this guy. You know, just got done with a 2-hour meathead style workout. He's big. He's got a size advantage. You know, his intensity is unmatched.
Yeah.
But other than that, I feel like D'Amico, it's a lot of pretty frumpy dudes here. You know, not horribly, but not, they're not D'Amico. Yeah.
Right. No. Pete Carroll is sitting between the two Harbaugh brothers in a way that makes it look like Pete Carroll is their dad. So
that's true.
You look at him because Harbaugh's got a schoolboy kind of look about him.
Yeah.
And John Harbaugh looks like the old Jim Harbaugh has a schoolboy look to him.
Yeah.
And John Harbaugh looks like the older, more mature brother that he is.
Yeah.
And Pete Carroll just couldn't be prouder of his two boys.
Brian Daboll. I don't know if there's a method to this at all. Like if it's a privilege to sit closer to the middle of the picture than on the outskirts. Brian Daboll on the very end, it's two rows with about 15 or 16 guys in each row, and Daboll is all the way to the left with a look on his face like he's getting fired after this picture gets taken.
That's where I think it was somebody on Barstool said he looks like the guy that was just trying not to attract attention, just constantly in fear that he's about to get fired. He's like, I'm just going to slide in here on the side and not make any waves. And then as soon as they're done, I'm getting the hell out of here.
Do they do a GM picture or is it just coaches?
I don't think they do a GM picture.
I've never seen a GM picture. Yeah, we have Nick coming on Thursday, Casario. He's down there right now too. All the GMs and D'Amico Ryans did his annual head coach sit down at breakfast and chop it up with the media interview. So I'm sure there will be some audio coming out of that a little later on today. The big doings at this league meeting, Seth. Apparently, the 18 game schedule is going to be discussed. At least we'll see. The new head of the Players Association, the president, this year's Demoris Smith. I think his last name is Howell. He is digging his heels and saying, we didn't even want 17 in the first place. 17 is too many. We don't want to do 18 games. I think the fans want 18 games.
I know. Do the fans want 18? I feel like 17 is enough. Do we really need this? Do we need to? And then, because you know what's going to happen after 18 games. Hey, we should expand the playoffs by one team and just dilute everything the hell down.
It does feel like we're reaching critical mass with the human anatomy here. You know, just in terms of injuries, and you feel it probably more poignantly than those of us do who haven't been through 20 surgeries or whatever. You know, we're just here to watch the gladiators beat each other up. But Howell makes this point. He's like, man, we're reaching the point now where it's not just injuries affecting this season. There's so much carnage being piled up. It's affecting the next season, too, in the preparation.
Right, you go longer in the regular season. You got 1 week shorter of an offseason.
Yes.
Then you go with another extra week, so it's a 2 week shorter offseason. And I just, you know, load management is already a thing to the point where I don't know why you would willingly. I mean, obviously, it's for money.
Sure.
But I don't know why you would willingly try to be vaulting yourself towards a situation that other sports wish they could get out of. I think if the NBA could start from scratch, they might say, yeah, gosh, truth be told, we probably would have fewer games in a season.
Yeah.
And then starters would play more and all that. But it's just, you can't unwind it because it means less revenue and nobody votes for that. So, the only thing I'd like about 18 games is the math would be easier. I'm tired.
17's a weird number.
I'm tired of just in my brain, everything is wired towards, okay, if you've got 9 wins, then you've got 7 losses. And now I've got to just, it's not like it's hard math or anything, but it's just not instinctive like it used to be.
So you don't think fans even want the 18th game?
It would be a good Pender poll.
That's what I'm about to type it. That's why I'm asking. So
yeah, I don't think they do.
Yeah, okay. So, and I'm going to ask it simple. Do you want an 18-game regular season in the NFL? Yes or no?
Yes or no.
Okay. I'll put that up in a little bit. But yes, the texters echoing what you just said about the odd number of games.
Yeah.
Either go 16 or 18. This is a text of the Jim Adler, the Texas Hammer text line. Either 16 or 18. Something about not being able to have a 500 record bugs me.
Yeah, it pisses me off. I bet Bill O'Brien hates it.
Oh, yeah.
What's he say? It's a, he can't say it's a 500 league
it's
anymore.
It's an 8-8-1 league. That's what he's saying. Yeah. Yeah. You got to have a tie.
They're probably going to get rid of, they haven't officially gone back to a 15-minute overtime, right? That's just one of the proposals.
Is it one of the proposals?
I don't know if it's one of the official proposals. There was talk that they were going to go back to, they were presenting it like it was a revolutionary concept to have a 15-minute overtime period. Like it was forever.
These all get voted on tomorrow at the league meeting. So all the rules changes, and I don't know, the 18-game schedule, I don't think it's voted on tomorrow. I think this is just from all the articles I've read. They're going to start to have an open dialogue about the 18-game schedule, but they are voting on some of the rule changes. Let me see how you feel about these. There's a proposal by a couple of teams. Detroit, I think, is who put this one forward, where the division winners would no longer get the top four seeds automatically in the playoffs.
Yeah.
They would get an automatic playoff bid, but the seeding would go by overall record. So you could, like last year, the Minnesota Vikings at 14-3, but a wild card team, would have had the third seed and a home game in the playoffs last year.
Yeah, yeah. I think it's there's still going to be injustices based on teams that play in a weak division anyway, so they have a better overall record. But it seems like it's a little bit closer to fair that you get a more accurate seeding. Like a lot of the teams that really earn a home game in the playoffs, but then end up having to go play on the road versus some division winner that went 9-8,
like Minnesota did, and they lost. So I'm the opposite on that. I like the home, and it's not just because the Texans get the four seed. It seems like every year that they make the playoffs. I like that there's a substantial reward for a division. If you're going to have divisions, really make them mean something, and that makes them mean more a little bit to me. But I don't have a strong feeling on that. The big one that's getting a lot of discussion is they're going to vote on the tush push. And there's rumors floating around that there is a lot of support, maybe not enough support to change the rule allowing the tush push. And you guys know the tush push. It's the play that the Eagles, by and large, have perfected, which is where they push Jalen Hurts on a third and short or a short yardage situation. And oftentimes he gets the first down or scores a touchdown, whatever.
This is the problem is that this is most poignantly a moment where, you know, you're reminded that football is run by former football players. Mm-hmm. The people that don't like it keep making this big push that it's unsafe, that it's unsafe, that it's unsafe. There's no actual evidence that it is any less safe than other football plays. That's the problem. And the real argument against it is that it's boring. Especially in the championship game with the Commanders and the Eagles, they had that one goal line sequence where the Commanders kept jumping off sides, and it was just, it's boring.
Yeah.
It's laborious. I did not like it. Even in the Bills game in the playoffs, the Bills ended up, they continued to run it even though they were getting shut down
by the
Chiefs.
They were bad at it in that game.
Yeah, and that added a little bit of drama to it at least. But I'd rather see just more exciting football plays. I don't like seeing 7 or 8 tush pushes in a football game.
Well, I don't think, I would like them to go back to, I think it used to be this way. I would like them to go back to where you're not allowed to push any of your teammates forward. Like, whatever.
Yeah, it used to be the offensive players were not allowed to push the ball carrier forward. And they changed that rule in the late aughts or early teens or whatever it was. And it just took a decade for NFL teams to realize, like, oh, wait a second, we can start pushing these ball carriers.
Yeah, yep.
And they came up with the tush push.
I
genuinely don't like it because it's boring.
Yeah.
And I don't care. The Bills and the Eagles are really good at it, so I could see why they would fight against it perhaps.
Yep.
But it's just a boring football play.
Text message about the 18-game schedule. I just put the poll up, by the way, Seth, and it's a simple one for NFL fans. Are you in favor of an 18-game regular season? Yes or no? So you can go to my Twitter, Sean T. Pendergast, and vote on it.
There's like 20 or 30 or so proposals. There's only one put forth by the Texans.
Okay.
There's, several teams asked for this. Baltimore, Cleveland, Houston, Las Vegas, Minnesota, Philadelphia, and Washington. But this might give us a little insight, perhaps, into Kyemi Fairbairn's struggles at the end of the year.
Oh, the one with the balls,
Proposal to permit clubs to prepare kicking balls before game day, similar to the process permitted for game football.
Okay.
Okay. They have this frenzy of trying to get the kicking balls ready where they scuff them up and everything on game day. And I think kickers want to go back to the old days when basically it was barely recognizable as a football by the time they were kicking it.
Yes.
Yeah. It's like, is that a football or a red rubber gym ball? I don't know.
Gigantic rotted potato. Is that a football? So that's the only one the Texans are on. The text message regarding the 18. Boy, people like to talk about these rules. There it is. 18 game topic. I'm for it. Hate when they complain about more games and player safety, which I understand. My problem is I don't hear the same argument when expanding the college playoff. Everyone seems up for that. That's fine.
They did make that argument originally with the college playoffs.
Yeah.
That was an argument for a little while, and then it quickly fell by the wayside. That's the money started rolling.
They saw what
in.
The check looked like for the college football player.
Yeah, I know. I'll tell you from a player's perspective, the thing that always annoys me is when the players will complain and say, well, this is just a cash grab by the owners. Well, yeah, but it's a cash grab that goes to you guys as well.
Sure.
So, like, let's not act like we're out there with an oath of poverty playing football.
Yep.
It's just a matter of, okay, how much is too much? I don't care about the player safety side. I care about the quality of the product.
Mm-hmm.
And the safety side is wrapped into that, in that if you start load managing guys, you just have so many on any given Sunday, you don't have as much reason for a guy to play through injury as much.
Yep.
I actually, if anything, I would argue that I want it less safe. I want guys to be grittier and tougher. Now, you had another game and it's still one more of like, well, we lose a guy for three games early in the year and then here we go. One of the things that makes football so much more digestible and popular in America, I think, is the fact that there are so few games.
Yeah.
And we just see steadily diluting it by having games on Thursday night, by having games on Saturday now, and then by adding more games. It's almost like it's inflationary, Sean.
It is.
You're printing too much money.
Well,
you're printing too much money and it devalues it.
Well, the scarcity of football games is what makes every Sunday so special. And the records, too. We had a few people point that out. The integrity of the record book when all of a sudden you have 18 games now. Like,
yeah.
Rushing for 1,000 yards in an 18-game season. Even in a 16-game season, it was suspect as to how impressive that is.
Yeah.
An 18-game season, it's like, okay, well. You know.
I don't care about that. I care very little about the counting stats in football. It's more about just your individual dominance in a given year. I don't worry about that as much, but I see why some people would.
Yep.
Especially because you go back historically and you got to go back to 14 games.
Yeah.
So it's already, the cat's already out of the bag in terms of screwing up the historical records.
All right. There's an NFL team whose situation right now mirrors the Texans from 2 years ago. You're going to hear some audio and be really glad that the Texans are in the spot that they're in right now. That is coming up next.
Nerds. Today's episode is sponsored by NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast. Making financial decisions shouldn't feel like filling out basketball brackets. Too many choices, too much noise, and no one wants a busted budget. NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast cuts through the clutter. Their finance journalists break down real-world money decisions with clear, research-backed insights. From investing to home buying to credit cards, the nerds help you navigate major financial decisions with confidence. Make smarter financial plays today. No luck required. Follow NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast wherever you listen.
Hi, this is Debbie, your Blinds.com design consultant.
Oh, wow, a real person.
Yep, I'm here to help you with everything from selecting the perfect window treatments to...
I've got a complicated project.
No problem. We make the complex simple. And I can even help schedule a professional measure and install.
I didn't realize you did that.
Yeah, we can also send you samples, fast and free.
Wow, I mean, I always thought I needed a designer to come to my home, but scheduling's always a nightmare.
Not with Blinds.com. We're on your schedule, and there's no haggling, no pressure, no hidden fees either.
I just might have to do more.
Oh, okay, whatever you need. How about you tell me what you had in mind?
Okay, then. So the first room we're looking at is for guests coming.
Blinds.com has covered over 25 million windows, all backed by a 100% satisfaction guarantee. Shop Blinds.com now and save up to 45% site-wide. Rules and restrictions may apply.
And now, two pigeons who can't believe how good humans have it with DirecTV.
These humans are hopping from streaming apps to live sports without batting a wing.
All from the DirecTV home screen.
With just one click, you could be watching a baseball game, a movie on Netflix,
or a critically acclaimed documentary.
You watch documentaries?
I love the ones that leave you with a question.
What?
Exactly.
DirecTV, a better way to watch whatever you want to watch. Visit DirecTV.com.
Internet-connected Gemini device, separate Netflix membership, and additional paid subscriptions required for third-party apps. Thumbtack presents the ins and outs of caring for your home. Out. Uncertainty. Self-doubt. Stressing about not knowing where to start. In. Plans and guides that make it easy to get home projects done. Out. Word art. Sorry, live, laugh, lovers. In. Knowing what to do, when to do it, and who to hire. Start caring for your home with confidence. Download Thumbtack today. It's no surprise that facial hair is personal. It grows from your face. Whether you're going smooth shaven or maintaining a beard, Dollar Shave Club offers shave and grooming products that are always high quality, but never overpriced. Visit DollarShaveClub.com and use promo code SHAVEUP for 20% off $20 or more.
Live from the Mokarem Injury Lawyers Studios, Sports Radio 610 presents Pain and Pendergast.
Okay, this is Charles Robinson of Yahoo, was on a Yahoo football podcast. And I heard him describing this team, and I'm like, wow, this sounds really familiar. This sounds exactly like where the Texans were 2 years ago, when the Texans were sitting with the second overall pick in the draft. They were coming off of multiple years of poor football and dysfunction, some of it caused by situations involving Deshaun Watson, which the Browns are experiencing right now as well.
Mm-hmm.
Here was Charles Robinson talking about conversations he's had with people in the building in Cleveland about how happy they are for one big reason about their situation where they're picking second in the draft right now.
I continue to talk to different people. You know, you have people in the Browns organization or whatever. And all of a sudden, I realize the Browns are very, very happy with this madness, this ambiguity, this cloud around them as an organization. I think they like, I don't want to say I think, I know they like that nobody really knows what the hell is going on with their team. Are they trading up for Cam Ward at number one? Are they taking Shadur at number two? Is it possible Cam Ward falls to number two? Oh my God, they're going to work out with Jackson Dart. Is Jackson Dart the guy that they're ultimately going to take? And oh geez, Kirk Cousins pops up in Ohio, so it's got to be Kirk Cousins. So the great thing about this is I don't think anybody has any clue whatsoever what the Browns are going to be able to do.
Remember that?
Yeah.
Remember that, Seth? Remember those days?
Yeah. Nobody knows what the Texans are going to do.
Nobody knows. Yeah, yeah.
This is fun. I bet if I were in the Browns organization and I heard Charles Robinson saying that, you know, I hate people reporting on emotion because as humans, we tend to actually be way worse at interpreting emotions than we think we are. And I like the Browns acting like, hey, we got everybody guessing right now. I feel like they've got some level of self-awareness to know that they've really screwed the pooch in a big, big way over the last few years.
Yeah.
That they don't think, yeah, all these other clowns think they know what we're going to do, but they don't know.
Yeah.
That's like when somebody that you know you could kick their ass is, but you can't because it's wrong.
Yeah.
But they're like talking all kinds of smack.
Yes.
And you're just like, all right, man, he won't stop yapping. You're in a bar, and you're just like, I just got to get out of here. I'm too old for this. And the guy's talking smack as you're walking out the door, even though you know for 100% fact you would destroy him.
Yep.
That's what the Browns talking smack or enjoying being in this moment would be like, as they sit at their number two draft position, specifically because of their incompetence and ineptitude.
Because,
no, I'm not buying it.
Not just conventional failure either. This wasn't just them going 3-14. Because you drafted a bunch of the wrong guys, and you had a bad GM, and you had a bad coach. Their coach was coach of the year twice the previous 4 years. By the measurements of the opinions out there, he's a good NFL head coach. You got there because you made one of the biggest bets that just blew up in your face. And, I mean, the reason you made that bet is because you had a lot of good players on the roster. And so, yeah, it's not just conventional failure. It is the failure of one of the biggest wagers that you made on a player that just went horrendously, horrendously poor. And I think I'm with you. I think even the Browns, Seth, are self-aware enough to hear a cut like that and go, we're not happy about where we don't think we've got everybody guessing right now. You know?
No, like, yeah.
You know who plays really good chess? The Cleveland Browns. That's who. You know?
It paints a picture almost of like, I'm sure you saw this, Sean, and most of the listeners probably did. A Bills fan at a Texans game where I can't remember which boxer it is, but it's the Bills fan is a boxer, professional fighter, and he's having a confrontation with a Texans fan. and the Texans fan is all up in his face and, you know, trying to start something, and the boxer just turns away with kind of this smile on his face, like, no. That it feels like the Browns would be like the Texans fan in that situation.
if that's how they feel.
They don't even know. Yeah, they don't even know how bad they are.
Yeah.
Or like how dumb they're being if they're cocky about how they're going to handle the scenario.
Dude, it is so nice not to be in that spot anymore.
The Browns, okay, so the worst places to be, if you look at the misery index, which is, I think the Athletic does this, is combined years without a Super Bowl win, a Super Bowl appearance, a conference championship appearance, a playoff win, or a playoff appearance.
Love me a good misery index. Let's go.
The Texans kind of get a pass on a lot of this because they've only been in existence for 23 years.
Oh, so, okay.
So they kind of sum up the totals of how long it's been since they've done any of these.
Mm-hmm.
But the Browns and the Jets are at the very bottom because they've gone 56 years without a Super Bowl victory, 56 years without a Super Bowl appearance. The championship game, the Jets, and Jets have been there 14 years ago. But then even years without a playoff win, it's been 14 years since the Jets won a playoff game.
Oh, so it adds up all the years you've not done these things and gives you a composite score. I see. Okay.
Well, the Jets haven't made the playoffs in 14 years.
Right.
Wow. Ugh. So the Jets have it the worst in terms of the misery index. The Browns are nipping at their heels.
Yeah.
Which one of those
is the most salvageable? Real quick, here's the funny thing about the Browns and the Jets, is the only thing that's keeping the Browns from overtaking the Jets is that they were out of football for 3 years. Right? Because it's been the same. It's been 56 years without a Super Bowl appearance for both of them. The Jets won Super Bowl III with Joe Namath. The Browns were gone for 3 years, so they didn't get. So if they had participated, they would be the most. They're both miserable franchises.
The Texans get a bit of a pass because they don't include the Oilers' history. I feel like if you did this by NFL city, the Texans would be a lot lower on.
Well,
that.
They include it, but it's on the Titans' ticket.
Right,
the Oilers
right.
History,
they,
yeah.
Right, they don't include it on the Texans.
Yeah.
So as far as and then they bailed themselves out with actual playoff victories and playoff appearances.
Yep.
But those two, if you had to take the Browns and the Jets, which one's got the more realistic avenue out of that misery?
I would say the Jets. I'm a big believer in Aaron Glenn. Now, when you say way out of there, you mean like getting back to the playoffs on the regular or winning a Super Bowl, or what are we talking about?
Yeah, getting to be looked at as legitimately a contender, at least at the beginning
of
the season.
I'm a big believer in Aaron Glenn. A lot of that is through your opinion and the opinion of others who've been around him before. I like that Aaron Glenn came in and that ownership gave him the chance to clean house and build that team the way he wanted to build it. I think New York's a more attractive place to get free agents to come play there than Cleveland is.
Yeah.
So if it's those two, I'll give the Jets the favorite over the Browns on that one.
This list is actually kind of bogus because they need to weight it for recency, because the Lions are the fourth most miserable fan base according to the misery index, and that's not the feel I get from the Lions.
Not right now. Not even close in the moment. I mean, unless,
but because they've gone 59 years without a Super Bowl victory.
Yeah.
32 years since a conference championship appearance.
You're right. There should be some weighting method for recency.
Yeah.
Okay. That's my project for today. A misery index that speaks to recency. Yes.
Do it going back to 2002. That would be the fairest way to do
it. Yeah.
So that include the Texans in the misery index since 2002.
I'm in. That's my project for today. And checking the poll to see how many people want an 18-game regular season. Misery index. There we go. 713-572-4610 if you want to get a lot of people weighing in on the rules stuff from the NFL. We'll get to your texts in the...
What are the people with the tush push? Where are people on that?
The tush push, it's funny. We had... treat the tush push like timeouts. You get one per half.
I like that.
Yeah.
I think that's a great idea.
So you like that as a middle ground?
Yeah, that would bring a lot of... I don't mind the tush push in isolation.
Yeah.
I don't like watching five of them in a row.
Yeah.
Yeah. Up on the goal line and what have you. Just give me some speed and violence. My God.
Another text. With regards to the tush push, players should not be permitted to aid the runner. Looks like a rugby scrum. I think that's where you and I are both on this thing.
Right, yeah, in general, because this rule's changed, they're going to specifically disallow it when the guy lines up behind the quarterback. I would just say, yeah, go back to the old rule if you're never allowed to push the ball carrier the way it used to be.
Yep. I don't mind the pushing as long as somebody ran a play and yardage was gained beyond the line of scrimmage. See, I don't. You can't push anybody. Then it gets any ambiguity out of it.
I want to see it on first and 10. just as an experiment. That was, I don't know. In JV football was my favorite time of play calling because we had, Farragher was the quarterback, Sean.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Farragher,
my guy.
Love, Notre Dame.
Yeah.
I was the center, and we had this one game where Farragher had like 25 rushing attempts, and it was all just him QB sneaking on first and 10. Second and 10, oh. Didn't matter. We went, unless there were two guys directly over me, we just bulldozed our way forward. He would grab onto my jersey and we would run. We destroyed Midlakes, those clowns.
My man was an athlete, huh, Farragher?
Well, behind me he was.
Yeah. He just put the ball in his hands and let him go do his thing. He's like the Lamar Jackson of whatever your JV football league was.
Yeah, the Victor Blue Devils.
That's what it was?
Yeah, there's a big push to try to change our mascot because some holy rollers didn't like the fact that we were called the Blue Devils.
And?
Because remember, that was back in the time when people were all concerned about cults and everything.
Yeah.
And we also, you know, because we had, just like every other high school, once kids found out that parents were worried about cults, they went out and put pentagrams all over everything made everybody convinced that there was a Satanism problem at our high school. Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Dead cats in the drinking fountain, all that. Yeah.
All right,
I knew every single one of those supposed cult members who did all of those.
Yeah. The Cougs are on their way to San Antonio. Dominant performance yesterday. Curious how you guys are feeling. 4.5-point underdogs to the Duke Blue Devils of all teams, and a big weekend for the Rockets. Big one for multiple reasons last night for the Rockets as well. We'll dig into a little hoops coming up next.
Street Easy knows former New Yorkers never stop talking about how much they miss living in NYC.
Life used to feel like a movie, but since we left and bought a house, it's like living in a DIY home repair video.
When it's time to buy, let Street Easy connect you with the right agent you need to never leave NYC. Go to StreetEasy.com to learn more. Street Easy is an assumed name of Zillow Inc., which has licenses in all 50 states.
Moms, dads, are you the parent of a student athlete? Do you want to know how to get the most out of youth sports? If so, listen to the Next Pitch podcast to give you the tools to raise an aspiring athlete. It's not simple, but we talk straight and give you the best insight there is when it comes to youth sports. We'll cover everything from nutrition and training to mental toughness and teamwork. It's a podcast you can listen to together with your kids so everyone can benefit. Follow Next Pitch on the Odyssey app or wherever you listen to podcasts.